This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello everyone. About a month ago, I joined Clubhouse, which is a platform for live conversations between people from all over the world. Since starting to use this app, I've joined several rooms highlighting mental health. I'm amazed by how open people are. I often get to hear people sharing their deepest thoughts and revealing the most extraordinary experiences. One of the people who moved me recently was today's guest, Sarah. She's a disability advocate and talks openly about her life with cerebral palsy. As Women of My Generation is a platform for honest conversations about body image and mental health, I thought she would be the perfect guest. Today, you get to hear her talk about emotional intelligence, her physiotherapy to help her walk short distances, and how her amazing service dog helps her get through her everyday life. She also talks about the prejudices she faces as a woman in a wheelchair, but how she wants to educate people in order to challenge ableism. It's an eye-opening conversation that brought a lot of insights to me personally. If you enjoyed as much as I did, please hit subscribe and share our conversations with a friend. The music you're about to hear is by the wonderful Tilda Ali. My name is Fanny Beckman, and this is Women of My Generation. Hello, Sarah. How are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm very well as well. I'm super excited to speak to you because obviously I heard you speak a couple of weeks ago on Clubhouse for the first time, and I was very touched emotionally by how honest you were and how open you were about your own experience and your own life. So we're going to speak a bit more about that particular topic later on. But first, I just want to, you know, start in the beginning, because as a child, you were diagnosed with cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who's not familiar with this condition, could you just explain what it is and how that affects your life?
Yeah, so the way I describe cerebral palsy, it's a neurological condition that I was essentially born with. I sustained a brain injury at birth. So basically, my brain had a lack of oxygen, either before, during pregnancy, or shortly after birth. I was born and immediately rushed to a different hospital, but in the process, they were trying to transfer me to a medical incubator. And in the process, I lost oxygen 3 times. And so, you know, there isn't a lot of research around what exactly causes the cerebral palsy, but what exactly specifically causes the brain injury and what happened there. But what the cerebral palsy did for sure was it caused brain damage to certain parts of my brain that control movement, coordination, dexterity, and mostly my ability to walk effectively. I mainly use a wheelchair to get around. I can walk with canes for very short distances, but find it's mentally and physically fatiguing quite quickly if I were to walk, say, down a block or even down my hallway in my apartment. Not to say I can't do it, but it's just, like I said, mentally and physically draining due to the brain damage. My brain just doesn't process movement and coordination as smoothly. So it takes me a lot of energy to put all of that together. That's not to say I've learned coping strategies. And I went through lots and lots of physical therapy and occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing multiple different holistic methods of physical therapy currently, and which I can definitely speak about, all to try to just maintain what I have. I'm not so much concerned about, you know, being able to walk perfectly, put one foot in front of the other, but at least to keep my strength up to whatever degree I choose, so that I can be able to, you know, transfer in and out of my chair, you know, go up a couple of steps if I need to, or even a flight of stairs because I can, all with assistance at this point, or at least having someone nearby to make sure I don't feel unstable.
I think that's super interesting because I think that's a misconception that it might be something wrong with, like, if you struggle to walk, that there might be something wrong with your legs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really interesting what you say, that it's actually your brain, because it makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. But in today's society, we a lot of us, myself included, are not always aware of how the body works in general. So thank you for sharing that insight as well, not just to, you know, how you feel about it yourself, but also what is actually going on in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And you do this quite a lot, like you describe yourself as a disability advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of norms do you want to challenge or change with this work that you do?
Yeah, it's kind of a new title that I've given myself. You know, my life, I've always been passionate about, you know, raising awareness, but also not being that person that looks different. So there's a fine line between me being able to, you know, move freely and go to the places I want to go to without the constant stares or the pats on the head or the, you know, oh, I'm so sorry. And, you know, in a way, unsolicited ideas and opinions. And that's not to say that I don't welcome them. But, you know, when I'm just trying to go to the store or just, you know, even take my dog for a walk, you can sort of see it. You see the little hesitation. So that's what I'm trying to change. Just and I can't quite figure it out, honestly. Like, I don't understand sometimes what it is that people are thinking. And I think me being aware and conscious of these preconceived ideas way before they even begin is part of what I'm trying to do. Because if I can put the message out there that say, I know you think I'm stupid, or I know you think that I can't do, you know, normal things.
Yeah.
I know you think I'm, you know, incapable. You know, then maybe people will go, yeah, you know, you're right. And that's okay. It's not to be ashamed of. It's just that's what society believes of people with disabilities. And, you know, it's a really hard truth for a lot of people, myself included, to understand. But I'm a person that wants to be open about it so that other people feel less shy.
Yeah.
And less, you know, nervous around me as a person with a disability. So
yeah.
That's what I've been trying to do. And I can speak about the Instagram series that I've been running for over 3 years now. Mainly it's about my service dog and I. That's how it started, but it's really evolved into, you know, that advocacy portion that I've been wanting to share about. So there's going to be that shift slowly but surely.
Yeah, like even just a couple of days ago, I saw this post that you wrote that you actually want or encourage people to come up to you and talk to you about it. Because, again, you said that you don't always know why these norms are there, because people don't actually talk to you or explain what, you know, that they might not have the knowledge that they should have and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all know, like, fear or being non-educated often leads to toxic prejudice. So you're doing a really important job there to actually talk about your own experience and, you know, be vocal on your Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned your service dog, which is obviously a very important part of your life. Do you want to explain what kind of role he has in your life?
Sure. His name is Edison. You can head over to my Instagram. It's at Edison_365_SD. And, you know, I'm sure you can link it in the episode.
I'll put it in the show notes for sure, so everyone can check him out.
Yeah, so we've been together for almost 5 years now. And he's from an organization in central Massachusetts, NEADS, NEADS. So we've been together for 5 years, and it's incredible the change that he's helped in me. I share the story of the moment that we got matched, and then going through a 2-week training to learn how to train together. And then as soon as we got home, about 3 days later, we went into New York City. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment where, in the middle of Grand Central Terminal, my pen dropped. And I panicked. I didn't know what to do. And I realized, oh yeah, Edison's right next to me. Aww. And he picked it up, and we were on our way in 30 seconds. So, you know, that feeling, that sheer panic of, you know, am I being judged? Are people looking at me? What's wrong with me? Why am I not able to pick up that pen? Mm. And then realizing that Edison was there to kind of mitigate that situation and kind of fix it temporarily. I'm not saying that, you know, the fear is still not there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was incredible, that feeling of just, oh yeah, he's right there. I mean, literally, I looked down to the pen, and on the way down to look at the pen, he's just looking at me like waiting. Yeah. And it's like time stopped, and he was looking at me, and I was looking at him, and I went, oh yeah, we got this, you know? And he picked up the pen, and we were on our way. And that's the way it's been ever since. So
it's incredible.
So he knows a lot of commands. I would say about 50 to 60 commands between basic obedience and actual commands and tasks that help with my physical disability. So from picking up dropped items, he only barks on command when I need help. He can fetch my water bottle if I need it. And he just is constantly learning how to support me. He's almost 7 years old now. You know, we've been together for quite a while now. And
That's amazing. Also, I can imagine, because obviously it's a huge help, just like practically, but also what you described here, that how much he means to you mentally, for your mental health and emotionally. You said a couple of times that you used to be ashamed of not being able to pick up that pen, for example. So that must be a huge relief for your mental state as well, to have that companion always.
Yeah, and I will say that before I got him, and right at that moment, I was about to just leave the pen on the floor. Mm. You know, because pens are not expensive. I could get another one. But I was determined to pick it up because I was like, something is different. I hadn't even recognized and thought about that he was right there, but I was about to just leave that pen. I don't need it. And then I was like, well, of course I need it. And then I looked at Edison, and he picked it up, and it was like, he didn't know what I had gone through. He was just there because he wanted to help me. So, yeah, it was quite an amazing moment.
Yeah, I bet.
And that was only 3 days into our partnership, so.
Wow. But I wanted to ask you this as well, because obviously you said now that you felt a bit ashamed of this condition previously. When did you kind of decide to stop being ashamed and more talk openly about it? How did that happen?
I think I've gone through a lot of different phases. When I was a child, I had to kind of go through it. So I was so focused on just getting through it. I will say that the shift has happened quite recently. Mm-hmm. And I credit it to Clubhouse, actually. I've never been as open as I have on Clubhouse about my challenges. So that's quite recent. But I think that's not to say that my thoughts have been formulating, and you know, there is just a moment in time right now where you can sit and feel sorry for yourself, which I'm not gonna lie, many times that's how I feel still. So there can be a semi shift at some point, you know, where you're not completely accepting, but you're heading towards that direction. So that's what I would say. And I aim to be as honest as I can about that, because I'm not going to say that I'm completely, you know, acknowledging of my disability. I accept it. You know, it kind of goes minute by minute, and that's okay. You know, one moment I could feel great, and the next moment, that good moment could bring me into a not so good moment. Yeah. So it just kind of, it fluctuates very, very, very frequently. And it's about learning to acknowledge those feelings and not let them completely shatter. And some moments, that's what I have to. Mm-hmm. So you just have to recognize it and learn how to just kind of go with the flow. Then again, that's easier said than done sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
Ride the wave, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so. It's so important what you're saying, that the importance of recognizing your struggles as well, because otherwise you can't really do anything about it, or you just go down this like vicious cycle and you can't really get up because it just gets worse and worse. And that's true in any types of mental health condition, I feel like, as well. If you struggle with something else in life, then you will be very negative around everything. But this also leads me in quite nicely to the topic that I want to talk to you about, which is emotional intelligence, because mm-hmm. that was the first time I heard you talk about your own emotional intelligence and how you learned to be more aware of that was at Clubhouse, as we mm-hmm. mentioned a couple of times now. Again, I'm very new to this platform, but I'm amazed about how open people are. And in this particular room, it was Simona, who's actually a friend of mine that I know here in London, and she was in this podcast as well, but she had this room and it just blew up, and it was so many people who shared their own stories.
Yeah.
And for people who listen to this who were unfortunate not to join, could you just share your how you kind of interpret emotional intelligence and your story about it as well?
Yeah, cool. I didn't even realize that she is like a friend of yours, or that you live close by. That's really cool.
Yeah, we do. Yeah,
yeah, that's cool. Mm. Yeah, I really appreciate topics like that, because you know it taps into something that I think about. Those topics, and I don't even realize it. Like when I came across the room, I go, "Yeah, I think so. That's right." You know, so And I actually forget what I shared specifically. I think my words change by the minute, but the general preface of the message is the same. And that is what I went through as a child, and I'm happy to talk about that as well. What I went through as a child, you know, put me in a situation where I pretty much emotionally had to kind of fend for myself. I had to just go through it, and I'll be honest, a lot of people didn't really even see that that is how I had to deal with it. You can't see that. You can't see struggles. You have to put them out there and ask for support, right? Yeah. So so that was part of my struggle as a child, what I went through. I didn't know how to ask for support. I mean, as a child, you just don't know. Even if I could have, I didn't know how. But on the flip side, I knew how to help myself through. I didn't say anything particular. I didn't, and that's not to say that my inner world was quite dark at times, but the end result of what I went through, I could remember, each step along the way, there were people that were trying their hardest to get me to the finish line. My family and I use this all the time. When I would need some motivation, they'd be like, okay, do you want M&Ms? Smile for M&Ms, or come over here for M&Ms. And as a child, that was like, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. So, that kept me going, those M&Ms, because I loved M&Ms. but there came a point, I think, in my later life, and I recognized the shift when it happened. M&Ms didn't cut it anymore. No. That didn't keep me happy. And then there was a shift that had to happen. I kind of went into survival mode where, if I can't depend on M&Ms anymore, then what can I depend on? Yeah. And how am I going to get through this? And the only option was to just get through. I mean, that's what mental illness is, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't get through, then you just go the complete opposite way and you say, I give up. I'm done. I give up. And there was a part of me, of course, even looking back, I knew I didn't want to give up, but looking back, I don't even know how I got through it. I never wanted to give up, but in a way, if you talk about the individual therapy sessions, it's like after an 8-hour school day, getting in the car to go to physical therapy for an hour, and sometimes it was, 30 to 40 minutes away. That's a long day that I'm, in school focusing and then having to go to physical therapy. So I can't really give a golden strategy that I use to get through. But I think you just, like I said, it's survival mode.
How old were you then?
When?
When you went in that survival mode where you kind of realized that you had to do something.
My recollection of it was 5 years old. At a very low level. But that intensity really increased. And even at five, I mean, I say it was at a low level because I was a child, but it was in no way not significant. So yeah, okay, here we go. But I think that my family and friends, they wouldn't have ever known that was what I was going through. As a very, very young child, I was just happy, even at 5 years old, smiling, happy. And that's not to say I was truly happy. As a child, you don't really know what you're going through. You just kind of go through it thinking, okay, I'll go along with it because that's what's best for me. Or I don't even know if I had the words to formulate that in my head. I just kind of went through it because, you know, I'm a child.
Do you need to share what happened to you then?
Yeah, I don't think there was a specific thing that happened. I don't think that there was a specific trauma. I think, you know, the brain definitely holds trauma. So I don't know whether this is part of what I sustained at birth. I haven't really thought of it that way. Or just a result of what I went through. Just the intensity of the therapy sessions and trying so hard to make connections with the physical therapists on on a deeper level of, look, you know, I'm fine. I'll do this therapy. And I was totally, you know, I showed up to every single physical therapy session and tried my hardest. But it goes back to this misconception of it's not about how to bend my knee or how to lift my leg or, you know, how to put my socks on. It goes really down to the person. And I think that that is what each person that I, with exceptions, I have some great therapists that I had when I was younger, and I'm actually in touch with one currently, who is very close to me. We're now friends. But, you know, there are specific therapists that I look back on that just didn't take the time to connect. They were focused on, this is how, you know, you are to move, and this is what's going to make you feel better. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there was any negative aspect to, okay, let's just slow down. You know, I'm a 5-6-year-old at that time, and I'm probably not going to walk, or, you know, whatever the result was. And it just so happens at 5 or 6 year old, I was learning how to walk. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe that was too early, or it just, things didn't align. And as I got older, I continued to learn how to walk independently, but never to the point where I was, you know, functionally walking down a sidewalk, you know, independently with nothing. So, you know, it's just parents try to do their best, and my mom or dad might be listening to this when it comes out, so I'm trying not to say anything bad, but you know, but it is what it is, and I'm very open with my experiences, and they know at this point, you know, they're very transparent in that. Yeah, say it, you didn't like us.
Oh,
you
know? That's so good.
And I still have a really hard time saying it, because I love them. They're my parents, and they tried their best and continue to try their best and help me the best they can. So, you know, it's just every person that came into my life contributed to helping me, yet there was this common goal of, like, let's fix this. Let's get you better. And that's such a positive thing, right? But it can change. It can change in an instant, depending on the tone, depending on the frequency of visits. And I'll say, you know, all the therapy that we did was completely out of our own pocket. Insurance, given my diagnosis, was and still continues to be a struggle, because if you walk, if you stand, they don't cover.
Really?
Barely anything. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's shocking.
You need to be poor and on Medicaid and Social Security in order to get anything. You know, and yeah, I mean, I'll just say this. The wheelchair that I'm currently sitting in is a highly customized wheelchair. Not as highly customized as they can get. And it insurance didn't cover it because I can stand and I can walk. And on paper, you know, that diagnosis of you know, whatever my official diagnosis is, because there are different types of cerebral palsy, is not enough. I'm not a spastic quadriplegic, where all my limbs are affected and I can't feed myself. That's the person who's considered, you know, incapable. They can't walk. They can't feed themselves. Absolutely, you know, that wheelchair will get covered.
So shocked right now. It's, wow, that's so bad. Wow.
Yeah.
That's sinking a bit. It's like my political brain is like, how can that even be possible?
Yeah.
Surely they must have money to fund your wheelchair.
Oh, yeah, I'm in the process of getting a new one. This wheelchair I've had for 11 years.
Oh, okay.
And we're getting ready, because it's going to be expensive. It'll be probably $6,000 or $7,000.
Oh my god.
You know, and that's what it is. And I'm very excited because I'm like, I'm ready to get a new wheelchair.
Oh, I love that you're so positive about it, because that's one of the things that you could easily get quite angry or frustrated about.
Nah, if I need it, I'm gonna go get it. And I've been talking about this actually for quite a while, for many, many years. And you know, the process to get a new wheelchair is hard as it is. So I made it very clear, if it makes any difference, I'm not going through insurance, because it could take up to 6 months to a year or more.
Oh, wow.
And for kids who are younger, that 6 months to a year provides a lot of room for changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, positionally, or, you know, they may need different features on the chair. So imagine, you know, you've got it all ordered. You're like, okay, it's coming. And then 2 years later, the child grows. You know, they can't sit up by themselves. They, you know, something dramatic has changed, whatever that might be, and the chair no longer fits. It still arrives, and it's right there, and the child cannot use it. So, you know, I don't take for granted that I have the luxury of, you know, just saying, I'm going to be paying for this. Yeah. And I don't take for granted that I have the luxury that I don't change. You know, I'm 31. You stop kind of changing when you're a teenager. So I'm very lucky that this wheelchair has lasted me so many years and could probably last me another 10 years easily.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm not, you know, if I don't gain weight or I don't change dramatically, yeah, I'm not going to get any taller. You know, so, but it's a choice that I'm making to improve my quality of life.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wake up to it every day and I use it every day, and I need to be comfortable. So there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's very important. I'm glad you're in that position as well, that you can buy a new one, because like you said, not everyone can do that. So you definitely, yeah, you're in that position, so treat yourself, you definitely deserve it. But women of my generation, it's a lot about body image, and obviously we talked about how it is, you know, getting comfortable with yourself and getting more confident as well. But yeah, I'm just curious to ask again, how has your body image been like growing up, and how is it now for you?
You know, I had a difficult time, but like I said, I just kind of, in a way, I accepted it, and I have a hard time distinguishing between not really acknowledging, does that mean I'm accepting it? And what I'm realizing is no. You can push things away and not acknowledge, but that doesn't mean that you've accepted. In fact, I'm really going through a lot, because I realized that isn't the case, that just because I've pushed it all down, it's right there, you know? So one of the things that I still struggle with and have been thinking about changing and fixing, I have a lot of scars from all the surgeries that I had. I had about 5 or 6 major surgeries. I can't think if the number is exactly correct. But so, you know, I have scars on both my legs, front and back. And particularly in the summertime, you know, you wear shorts. I've never been the one, a person to wear shorts. You know, I don't think it was a conscious thing. I just think that, you know, when I look, it reminds me of what I've been through.
Mm.
And to be specifically, I know what each scar represents, what surgery, and it just, you know, I've actually never thought of it this way, but they're permanent, you know. And I went to a doctor at one point and asked about getting them revised, and even the doctor said, if you're not like super self-conscious of them, he said, I know you are, but you know, it's a surgery to redo what is already done.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one thing. And I noticed too that being in my wheelchair kind of puts a blanket over how I look. You know, my knee turns inward, or you know, my knees bend quite a bit. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is in the physical therapy that I do work with, it's more holistic, and I can speak about that later if you'd like.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, I decided I have a walker that I use, and I was going to transport it to my parents' house because we were going away for the 4th of July, and mm-hmm. I decided I'm just going to walk out of the building. And then ended up sending that video to my practitioner, physical therapist, and yeah. He said, "Wow, that's incredible! You know, mm-hmm. you're walking so great. You're, you know, moving so well." And I said, "But what about my left foot turning in? And what about?" I said, "Not quite." And you know, we didn't go into specifics, but I'm the one that looks at that and wants to fix that. And I know I couldn't look at it much, much more, because I just, you know, that's me. And the more I looked at it, the more I was like, okay, I just can't look at this.
Mm.
Because it just, the moment was great. I sent the video off to my physical therapist because I felt like it was beneficial for him to see, and I was proud of it.
Yeah.
But when you look at the little discrepancies, that's when it's really hard.
It's just a classic one. Like, when I hear the story, I'm just like amazed, but you know, that's an achievement for you, and I'm glad you said in the end that you are proud of yourself for that.
Yeah.
Because you should be. But then again, we all have that critical brain towards ourselves that no one else sees. That they just see the great things that you did just did.
Yeah.
And I've talked to other guests in this podcast about this as well. Like, we are so hard on ourselves. Like, we would never speak that way to other people. Hopefully not.
Right.
But we're just so, so hard on ourselves.
Right.
But can you, like, obviously we talked a bit about that. Like, it all depends on where you are in your mind in general. If you struggle with other things in life. But like on today, for example, can you see the great things in that, like your achievement in being able to walk, those times when you can do or when you feel all right doing so? Or do you still just criticize yourself for not being good enough?
Yeah, I think I'm a very literal thinker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at the photos and the videos, definitely just, it's right there. On a daily basis, I still find myself going back and forth, like I said, by the moment. Mm. But I do have moments of, yeah, I got this. You know, it really depends on what I'm doing. If I'm just sitting alone, not really doing anything, and then I have to, you know, if I'm hungry, I want to get a meal, or, you know, I need to do something, it's very hard because I'm alone and there's all these external factors. But the moment after I booked a vacation for next month, I was feeling great. I'm like, I made the decision, you know. So it really depends on, and I was in the same physical location. So it really depends on, you know, for me, the external gratification of what I'm doing, what I'm purchasing. Looking ahead, I purchased, you know, airline and hotel tickets for 3 weeks ahead. So of course I'm gonna, you know, get to that, and I'm gonna go there and have a great time. But it's harder to think of that now versus the moment I literally booked the reservations. So I think it's balance of remembering, okay, I'm not just booking these tickets for 3 weeks in advance, but like, I do have something to look forward to. Booking the tickets isn't the end of what I'm gonna do. You know, of course, you know, there was the time it took, and, you know, figuring out, do I need to spend this money, or, you know, so there's a lot of different pieces of it, but not forgetting that I booked those tickets because it's something I wanted, and not losing sight of, in 3 weeks, not only did I book those tickets, but I'm actually going to go.
Where are you going?
Houston, Texas. It's a disability conference in 7 states around the U.S., just for a weekend.
Oh, amazing.
And so this one is in August, the first weekend in August, and it's for 3 days. And there are different vendors, different accessible items. My wheelchair vendor company will be there. And it's just an opportunity to, like, actually talk to these people about whatever you need. There is a division of the company that my wheelchair is made by. They actually have a repair shop that they set up as part of their booth. And you can go and get, you know, bolts and screws fixed and even a new set of actual wheels. You know, so there are things like that where you don't really get the chance to actually, you know, get the repairs that you need and talk to the people that you need to talk to about, you know, personal things, you know, about, you know, your wheelchair's not fitting you well, or looking into a new wheelchair, or can you advise me on a you know, accessible vehicle? And they're right there. And they're really, really amazing community there. So I try to get to a lot of them. And this one, I just decided I just got to go, you know, after being cooped up with COVID and, you know, people, more and more people are getting vaccinated and traveling is actually quite easy. Yeah. I was like, let's go, you know, so that's where I'll be.
Sounds like an amazing opportunity. I bet you're excited about that. But I always end up by asking my guest if you have like any last advice to gain more confidence and to take up more space in the world we live in.
Yeah, I would say just don't be afraid to speak up about what you're thinking, about what you're feeling, even if you feel it would be borderline offensive. because I think, and not to say that talking like this is offensive in any way, but I think talking honestly can be hurtful to some people if you're not in the place to, you know, fully understand what you're saying. Like, if people were to come up to me, and I've gotten much better with this, but, you know, just the offhanded comments of, if you just believe in God, then that will get you through. Personally, I'm not super religious, so to say that is offensive is hard in the moment, but it is. You know, you just have to be careful. And I would never say that. Yeah. Let's be honest, I would never say that directly to a person. I give the example of being in an Uber. You know, it's kind of a vulnerable space to say, look, that's not called for at this moment. Could potentially even put me in a more vulnerable space than I'm already in. So it's a fine line, but you know, I say this nicely, just, you know, think about the situation, the context. If I'm taking an Uber, I'm taking an Uber to get a ride. I'm not taking an Uber to make a connection. And that's not to say I'm not a friendly customer. I'll be as friendly as I think I want to be. But at the end of the day, it's just a ride. And as a person with a disability, I want to have that freedom and that just take the ride and not have all that extra, you know, baggage put on me of, you know, what's your disability? You know, what religion are you? Do you live alone? Do you live, you know, with family? So it's just think about, and it's a lot to think about when you see a person with a disability. I'm sure that people think so many things, and what comes out maybe isn't intended, but that's just kind of what I'm trying to kind of craft.
Yeah, definitely. You have every right. If someone says anything offensive to you, you have every right to speak up and, you know, maybe explain how you think about that. Obviously, I notice you're quite diplomatic and you seem, you know, very nice and you want to be perceived very nicely as well. But also you have the right to put your foot down if someone says something offensive for you. So I totally agree with that. That's a very important thing to bear in mind, and also say no to things as well if you don't want to get involved in certain conversations or activities as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's
very bad.
Yeah.
Well, I think I've learned so much during our conversations. I'm so, so happy that you wanted to talk to me about your experience.
Of course. Thank you so much.